And now, live from Jerusalem, you're listening to Israel Inspired Radio. Here are your hosts, Rabbis Ari Abramowitz and Jeremy Gimpel.
Shalom and welcome to Israel Inspired on the Land of Israel Network, thelandofisrael.com. Ari Abramowitz here with Jeremy Gimpel. Jeremy, good to have you.
Lots going on.
Let's dive right in. Talk to me.
Syria is in total shambles. There was a suicide bomb that killed 30, I think, in Iraq. Chemical warfare has been spilled all over the people of Syria. Children, I mean, the images on Twitter and on Facebook and on YouTube are horrendous.
Sarin gas.
It's like really like it makes you nauseous.
Let me interrupt you really quick.
The UN is urgently meeting to condemn Israel one more time.
And the European Union, 28 officials came together to condemn Israel because they are evicting illegal Bedouin squatters from certain lands near Ma'ale Adumim. Too little, too late, in my opinion. But that is what they are focusing on. You know, are we going to waste our time on this?
I'm just telling you what's going on on the global scheme. It seems as though the Middle East is falling into jihadi chaos, and the Jew hatred of Europe and the Islamic hatred towards the Jews is so overwhelming that it doesn't matter if there are thousands of Syrians that are dying from chemical warfare. There's just nothing that they care more about other than illegal squatters on Jewish land getting evicted. And the sickest of all things is that if Obama took care of the Syrian chemical problem, as well as he took care of the Iran nuclear problem, we're really in for a roller coaster ride.
Yeah, so let me ask you, can you explain to me what is the explanation for this pathological preoccupation with the Jewish people?
You know, it's the Passover is right around the corner. And there's something marvelous. My mother sent me a link to a Dennis Prager talk.
I saw it. Beautiful.
Beautiful. And he said, you know, when he was a little kid, he read from the Haggadah, and it says, "Bechol dor vador omdim aleinu lechaloteinu, v'akadosh baruch hu matzileinu miyadam." In every generation, an enemy rises up and comes to lechaloteinu, literally means to finish us off, to destroy us, to annihilate us.
To consume us,
that we will be no longer. And Dennis Prager, as a kid, said, the rabbis who wrote that, they were wrong. I mean, after the Holocaust, it can't be that another nation would come up to just totally try to annihilate us like the Nazis tried, and that's it.
And the world witnessed that thing. That's going to be it. We've moved on.
Yeah, we've moved
species.
On. The rabbi's wrong. Every generation, there's going to be an evil energy that somehow takes shape in the form of another nation or another religion or another ideology and actually try to annihilate us, to wipe us out. And here we are with the Ayatollah of Iran, who really is responsible for a lot of what's going on in Syria, because the Hezbollah is a proxy of Iran.
And his grandson is my exact body double.
That's weird.
I mean, down to the gap in our front teeth, birthmarks were exactly, if you want to, what's his name? Khomeini?
Ayatollah Khomeini.
Yeah, no, but his grandson's name.
Ari Abramowitz.
Google the Ayatollah's grandson, and you'll see with someone who looks eerily like me. But anyways, we've talked about that on many shows before, and I still think there's something happening here. The groundwork is being laid for some showdown in the future between me and the future Ayatollah.
I mean, just so you know, that Haaretz, which is really a left-wing rag, put out a title saying 32 humanitarian crises in the world, and the European Union gathered together to focus on the Arabs squatting on Jewish land. There are 32 humanitarian crises going on, and land squatters are what Europe is obsessed with. And I started thinking about it. Not much has changed in Europe in the last, 80 years. Where Europe were passively supporting the Nazi regime, instead of like kind of passing over the Jews, giving over the documents, doing whatever they could to really facilitate the annihilation of 6 million Jews in Europe. So now studies came out saying that, I mean, millions of dollars the PA receives from Europe is going to pay the families of terrorists that are killing Jews. So from passively supporting the Nazis, the European Union is now passively supporting jihad in order to kill Jews. And they could say, no, it's for the human rights of the Arabs that are living in the land of Israel. But we see what's happening. Syrians are being gassed to death in the most horrific way possible. There's no flotillas to Syria. There's no European condemnations that are of any meaning. There's no action that's being taken. They're focusing on Israel. And what it exposes is the truth that the Jewish people are a unique people, that every generation, there will be an energy that somehow forms itself into another religion, another ideology, another country, that will focus on wiping Israel, the Jewish people, off the map like Iran is today. V'akadosh Baruch Hu matzileinu mi'adam. And Hashem literally protects us, this one little sheep surrounded by wolves, every generation. If there is no greater proof of the existence of the God of Israel, it is the people of Israel, that somehow we
are
living.
Our very existence is a testimony.
This, like,
to
little
that.
Country, the size of, smaller than El Salvador, about the size of New Jersey, is surrounded not only by Muslim jihadists, over a billion of them, but in total chaos. All of our neighboring countries are in total chaos. And what's so funny is when you come to the heart of Judea, in the middle of the West Bank, and you come out to our headquarters where we're recording right now, you cannot feel more serenity in the world. There is no place that is more peaceful, more calm, more uplifting, as like all around us. I know that only a 2-hour flight, a few hour drive north of us, there is chemical warfare being spilled onto Syrians. And here in the heart of Judea is peace and tranquility.
It's literally the eye of the hurricane.
It's unbelievable.
That's really what it is here. And it's true. But you know, let's bring it to where we are right now in the year. We're approaching Shabbat HaGadol, the great Shabbat, which is the Shabbat before Passover, which is interesting as to why it is called Shabbat HaGadol. Out of all the Shabbats in the year, it is Shabbat HaGadol is the one right before the great Shabbat is before Passover. Why? Well, it's interesting that there's two different themes to Shabbat, if you think about it, Jeremy. The first theme is an Exodus, and it talks about God creating the world, and on the seventh day he rested. And the second theme, it's in Deuteronomy, and it talks about Shabbat being the day that God rescued the Jewish people from Egypt. That's the time Zecher LeYetziat Mitzrayim, right? When we're saying the Kiddush, the sanctification on Shabbat, it's all about the Exodus from Egypt. So it's like the merging. This Shabbat, it is the time where the Jews were redeemed from Egypt, and a time where we're able to spend that blissful moment of Garden of Eden in time, recognizing that Shabbat is the day that Hashem created the world and he rested on that day. So it's redemption of mankind, redemption of the Jewish people, and it's a time of redemption. And as we're cleaning up, I'll tell you that being out here now, I'm living in our headquarters. There's no fences around, and I'm now really like on my hands and knees scrubbing, cleaning this place, ridding it of chametz, of leavening, of any sort of bread. And, you know, you can clean during the year. And when you're cleaning during the year, you're cleaning, and it's a thing. But for some reason, I feel like an added dimension of spiritual meaning is endowed upon you when you're cleaning for the purpose of Pesach.
Sure. It's a mitzvah. Every moment you're cleaning for Pesach is a mitzvah.
Right. And you're, while that cleaning is happening, I've really tried not to have too much music in the background, nothing, just to be experiencing it fully, and there's chametz, there's leavening within ourselves that we're supposed to be cleaning out while we're physically cleaning.
What leavening do you need to clean out?
You know, that's a tough question. Leavening. Well, so what is leavening? I think leavening to a large degree is the connotation is that of arrogance, right? We have this fluffy, inflated ego, this arrogance, and where is our arrogance? And I've been thinking about where my own arrogance is.
I can tell you where your arrogance is.
I'm sure you can. It's true. Well, you know what? I've heard from a few people have written in and said on the last show or two that I've been like snappy with you, right?
No, it's called chavrutas. We argue. We debate it out. We hash it out.
Okay,
it's a
that's
Jewish
true,
tradition.
But if people are feeling like I'm not being nice to you, that's an alert to me.
No, I think they're saying that's that you're not being nice in
but
general.
But what is it? Okay, let's move on. But where would that come from that I'm getting snappy with you? That you're probably doing or saying something that I don't want you to do or say, and it comes down on some level to control. I think a big part of this cosmic battle between mankind and God is the battle over control. And when I'm trying to control you, you're not falling into line in the way that I think you should be, and hence I'm getting snappy with you. And arrogance is to a large degree that also. I know the way things should be, and I'm going to control and make that happen, and we're trying to rid ourselves of that arrogance. And I think if the Jewish people were to look at our national chametz, our national leavening, our national arrogance, what is our national arrogance? It also comes down to control. And what are we trying to control? We think that there's something that we can do in our arsenal of actions that we could take in the world that would somehow ensure or increase the chances of our own survival. And what does that mean? Well, I mean, there's nothing that we can do. It doesn't matter how many times we just saw that Netanyahu came out and said he's going to freeze settlement construction and scale back as a goodwill measure towards Trump, towards your holy Trump, that you would say, oh, and now we're good to go. And now the prime minister of Israel is pulling this shtick of saying, oh, we're going to take goodwill measures and freeze settlements. The same nonsense, the same deal all the time. I don't blame Trump. I never held him on the pedestal that you did. I blame ourselves. What does this mean? On the one hand, he's from one side of his mouth saying we're Jews because we're from Judea. This is who we are. We're the indigenous people of the land. It's justice. And then he's saying we're going to stop building in Judea and Samaria. I mean, it's why would he do that if not he thinks that there's some sort of pragmatic, strategic best interest for Israel to do that? And when we say the only best interest we have is to follow in Hashem's ways, to act with dignity, to act with integrity, to act in truth, and then let the cards fall where they may. But I think that that need to control is a big part of our national chametz leavening that we're trying to clean out.
So control. I think that, I mean, when I think about arrogance of the, like the bread that's puffing up, you're kind of putting it to an element of control. Fine. I'm not disagreeing with that. That's definitely one dimension of it. I have a different dimension of it that at least I'm working on in my own personal life. And I think that is expectation. That once you have an expectation that's been puffed up, as if you know what's right for you, as if we know, meaning we think that, hey, maybe if I freeze the settlements and I do this and then I do that and I try to manipulate from the left, I'll come back from the right and then I'll achieve my ultimate goal. Or an expectation, hey, I was supposed to get that job because I was supposed to do that. I was supposed to marry that girl and I was supposed to have this thing happen. I was supposed to have this and I was supposed to, this was supposed to be done by that time. And we've puffed up and made up in our own brains what we think is meant to be. And taking away the arrogance, for me, taking away the puffed up bread, is just saying like, well, what is just the flour and water here? What is just the reality? What is Hashem guiding me towards? Not what my expectations are leading me to believe or what I'm hoping for, but what's just the truth. Whatever the reality is obviously where I'm meant to be. What I'm going through is what I'm meant to be going through. And I think that we, the Jewish people, at this time, Pesach, the Hasidic masters say literally means Pesach, our mouth that speaks. That's why the command on Passover is Vehigadeta Lebincha, that we should speak over the story of the Jewish people to our children. Because really, Passover is the beginning of our story. It's the beginning of us as a nation. We went through the birth canal of the Nile and were birthed as a people. We came down to Egypt as a family and we left as a nation. And the story of our people began then. But we were born as a people, not in the land. Many people are born as a country because, you know, a language may have developed. There was a certain geographic territory that formed a certain people, a certain culture. Our nation was born outside of our land. And then we received a constitution. We received a mission. We received guidance at Sinai. And then with a mission, we went into Eretz Israel, into the land of Israel. And that's really the question. Whatever the expectations are, the hopes are of who we are, what we are meant to do, I believe, during Pesach is to go back to the basics and ask very fundamental questions. Who are we? And what were we redeemed for? What is our purpose in all of this? And we know that, like, from the very beginnings of the Torah, there are laws of the Korban Pesach and laws of the Leila Seder that you're not allowed to leave notar, you're not allowed to leave anything left over. So it encourages a family gathering around the Passover offering in order to make sure that all of the food is eaten. So you have uncles and you have aunts and you have cousins, and you have brothers and everyone, like the extended family, is invited really to eat. And there's something about reconnecting to your parents and your grandparents and their parents and their parents and living through that Passover Haggadah, which literally means to tell over, because the telling over of the story brings us to a place of saying, well, whatever my expectations were as being a Jew, maybe I thought I was supposed to be in New York and make a lot of money and support Israel with my checkbook. But if we really go back to the very beginning, what were we redeemed from Egypt for? Why were we brought out? We have a mission. We have a purpose. And it's now tapping into that purpose once again that should realign us nationally and should realign us individually on our own spirit paths.
You know, you said notar, that nothing should be left over. I'm also trying at the same time while preparing for Passover, while preparing for Pesach, not only physically and geographically and cleaning the area and studying the Torahs and thinking about what I'm going to talk about at the Seder, but I'm also trying to focus on this week's Parsha too, because there's a coinciding, a confluence of a lot of different spiritual energies all at once. And one of them is Parshat Tzav. It's happening this week's Torah portion. And it talks about different sacrifices that happened at the temple. And first of all, just the entire idea of sacrifices are so important for us to revisit and to think about what that actually meant and what it's about. And we could study the sacrifices forever, because it's a shame, because myself, and I think a lot of people, when it comes to these parshiyot, these Torah portions that talk about the sacrifices, our eyes may glaze over. It seems not so relevant. But if you look deep within the sacrifices themselves, there's so many secrets. There's so much going on. You know, it talks about the Korban Olah, right? And part of the Korban Olah, the ascension sacrifice? How would you define it, Jeremy?
Yeah.
The ascension sacrifice. So it was completely consumed by fire. Now, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai Rashbi, as we call him, he said that the reason you have this is Hirhurei Halev. Hirhurei Halev. Now, what's Hirhurei Halev? How would you define that?
Reflections of the heart.
Right. Contemplations of the heart. Ideas that you have that are impure ideas, sinful thoughts that you have, you actually need to sacrifice. You need forgiveness for those. It seems a little much. It's not only our actions, but even our thoughts. But, you know, it says in Shema, Lo tatru acharei levavchem v'acharei einechem, you shall not go astray after your hearts and after your eyes. We are supposed to be vigilant about our thoughts. And, you know, Western idea would totally reject this, Western thought. It's one thing, your actions, but fantasies, thoughts, those don't hurt anybody. Literally, why? It's not even a sin. You're not doing a sin. Just the thought itself is something.
I remember a Chabad teaching once that said, imagine two men. One man is a totally pious man, a righteous man, a good man. And at one point, something happens and he's just struck with an evil inclination and he sees a wallet and he steals it. And he goes home and he takes the money and throws the wallet away. And there's another man who all day long is fantasizing about stealing and thinking about stealing and wanting to steal and stealing and wanting to steal and thinking about what he'll do with the money that he steals and hating that other guy that he wants to steal from and wanting to steal and thinking about stealing. But he never actually steals anything. At the end of someone's life, who's really lived a better life?
The thief, probably.
The thief, of course the thief. He lived a holy, pious life his whole mind. The other guy obsessed, thinking all the time about how much he wants to steal. And of course, steal could be put with any other type of lustful reality. And someone whose mind is totally contaminated, someone that is on some sort of path of growth, of connection with God, they would want to cleanse themselves.
Right, and that's really what the Rambam says about this. He says that the sins are usually due to the animal part of the body. We give in to some sort of lust or desire or whatever it is. But so that's a sin. We have to bring a sacrifice for the sin. But when it's our thoughts, our mind, well, the mind is divine. That's the most divine part of who we are, as far as physiologically is concerned. The mind is meant to ponder and contemplate Hashem in the world, the greatness of his creation, the kindness that he's done to us, and to cleave to Hashem. That's what our mind is for. So to take that vessel that is most meant to cling to Hashem, to elevate ourselves, and we're going to sin with that, well, that's why we need to have an elevation offering. The Olah is the elevation offering. So, you know, the depth of, and that's why while we're cleaning for Pesach, the thoughts that we're having are of such importance, because our thoughts are, in some ways, I think in the spiritual dimension, in some ways more real than our actions are. Yeah. So it's just, I'm trying to stress to our listeners out there to take a moment while you're cleaning for Passover and try to go through not only where our arrogance is, but where our thoughts are and what we can do to rectify those thoughts. And one of those things, I think, is to double up on Torah learning, to double up on spirituality, to bring it in. Because if you don't have a constant influx of challenging and uplifting and inspiring Torah ideas, spiritual ideas, then there's going to be a vacuum that will be filled by nonsense, negativity, and that which will drag you down. If you're not going up, you're going down.
Yeah. Well, I was just posed a question with my kids last Shabbat, you know, preparing for Passover. And I said, okay, so the Jews were slaves in Egypt. And what did Hashem do? He brought us out of slavery. But then who is Hashem? Hashem is our king. And then what do we become? We became servants to him. And I'm like, well, why did Hashem bring us out of one slavery only to put us into another slavery? Meaning we're slaves here, we're slaves there, so now we're not enslaved to Pharaoh, now we're slaves to Hashem, and we have to do his will. Why not just set us free and let us be who we are? And that was really a fun question to ask my kids and hearing all of their thoughts about it. And then at the end, I shared my own thoughts that I learned from Rav David Zeller. And he said that, you know, there's two words in Hebrew for freedom. And one is chofesh, which is like, you know, the kids are on chofesh now. The kids are on vacation now. It's like, it's just freedom to do whatever you want. You want to bum around. You want to go to the pool. You want to go to the beach. You want to go on a hike. You're chofesh. You have freedom to do whatever you want. And there's another word, which is called chirut. And there really is no word for chirut.
The closest, I think, is liberty.
I guess so, but it doesn't really express at least the thought that I want to give over, because liberty just means, again, you're at free to do what you want. Like, you're just liberty. There's just freedom to do what you like. I don't know if there's really a significant dictionary difference between freedom and liberty. Maybe there is. I'm Israeli. What do I know? But I'll tell you in Hebrew what the word chirut means. When someone is left just to be free, and I know that that's what, you know, Americans, it's the Statue of Liberty is their monument. The Jewish monument that was declared that the Jewish people build as we cross over the Jordan in the book of Deuteronomy, we're called to build a monument as well. But the monument is actually a giant stone with the Torah carved on it. That's the monument of Israel, where America is all about liberty. You want to be this kind of person. You want to live that kind of life. You want to dress this way. You want to be that way. You want 5 bathrooms. You want 10 bathrooms. All the bathrooms you want. America, liberty, everything goes. But chirut is not chofesh. Chirut means that we are choosing our freedom. Because when you're just left with freedom, just with chofesh, you really just become a slave to your inclinations. You're tired, so you can sleep. You're hungry, so you eat. You want to do something else, so you go do something else. Chirut comes from the word charita, which means an engraving. It somehow means we're flexing the faculty of our free will. We are purposefully choosing a path and choosing a way in the world. And when the Jews were freed from Egypt, we weren't just brought into the slavery of our inclinations and just to be free of to do the hedonist things that we want. But we were actually given luchot. We were given luchot. We were given tablets that were charutim, that were like engraved, incarved. And that charut, that freedom, is when we carve out our own destiny. We carve out our own choices. We were given the Torah to give us a mission and a purpose in order to choose our path and choose it right. Because Jews in America may be the sickest people alive today.
Okay, when you say stuff like, you could say there are Jews in America who are not among. Okay. Yeah,
let me just clarify. Say what I want to say. I'm in the middle of talking, so let me say what I want to say. The Jews in America that are standing against Israel, that are opposing Israel, the only free country in the Middle East, as Syria and Egypt and Iraq and all of this chaos, there are Jews where Israel is their country. It's the Jewish country. It's the only
Jewish
country.
You're just saying the sarin attack in Syria, and what are the Jews saying? They're saying Israel is at fault because we're not doing enough.
I just saw a thing on Twitter that blaming Israel for Syria, that Israel's not doing enough for Syria. Whatever it is, they hate Israel. But really what happens is they hate themselves. They hate being Jewish. 2,000 years of persecution has made the Jewish people sick. Very similar, I remember Rabbi Moshe Kempinski in the Old City. I never understood. This was maybe 15 years ago. He's like, the Jewish people are like an abused child. And sometimes the child will blame themselves for their parents abusing them. And the Jewish people that have been persecuted by Muslims and persecuted by Catholics and Christians and Crusades and Inquisitions and Communists and Nazis and God knows what else, they blame themselves. And so they hate themselves, and they have like this sick, twisted reality. There's no country in the world where their own people are so against their own country. And the
it's really a unique phenomenon.
It's unbelievable. And what is that? The expectations that the Jewish people in America have set. And now I can already, this is already a wider brush that I'm painting with, because this is a lot of Jews. If you think of what is the dream of every Jewish father and mother in America, that their kids get into Cornell, that their kids go to Yale, that their kids go to Harvard, that their kids go to Berkeley. And it's specifically in that expectation, we found where is the greatest enemy of Israel? It's in the universities. And then Dennis Prager points out something really amazing in this last speech. He said, well, our greatest ally was meant to be the universities, the intellectuals, the rationalists. Of course, they were going to love the Jewish people. The Jewish people, like, flocked to the universities. And who was our biggest foe? What was the expectation that our biggest foe would be? Well, our biggest foe is obviously going to be Bible-believing Christians. They've been our biggest foe for 2,000 years. And now, with all this puffed-up expectation, with all of what we expect to be, with all this chametz that's inside us, the universities are our biggest enemy, and Israel's biggest ally are these Bible-believing people from a Christian background. So if we can just take a break this Pesach and go back to basics and just see reality for what reality is, that Israel is the only free country in the Middle East. It needs to be supported. It needs to be helped. It needs to be strengthened. In fact, if we were to really discover our identity, the calling card of the Jewish people is freedom. We were born in slavery and freed. Like that was our mission of all missions, was to abolish slavery from the world. And now all of these Muslims are enslaved by other Muslims. And a real Israel that really took its own self seriously would liberate the Muslims from themselves, would establish a free zone all across the Middle East, from the Nile to the Euphrates, where Israel would actually reign and give freedom to everyone from every background, and not allow the Muslim jihadists and their chemical warfares and their nuclear aspirations to lift a finger. And the IDF would be David's army, and then we would actually fulfill the ultimate goal of the Jewish people and free the world from this last final obstacle called Islamic Jihad.
Well, I think the only way we're going to be able to free the world to bring any sort of real redemption is not through us, but by understanding it's by bringing Hashem into the world, by flexing our muscles and asserting our values over them, and we think that we're going to be able to bring freedom to all. No, only when we bring God into our own lives, our own minds, on a national level within ourselves, are we going to be able to bring this rectification to the world. Because just what you said about the universities were the big bastion of hope, and now they're the source of our undoing, it works that way with idolatry all the time. And that's why one of the most important ideas, you know, of idolatry, that whenever we have an idol that we're not aware of even, well, what happens is Hashem takes that very idol, like the universities, and smashes it over our head, and it's the source of our undoing, is the very idols that we've built up. And that's why one of my most precious Torahs that I love so much is the idea on Passover when we were leaving Egypt, and we were told to put the blood of the lamb on the doorpost. That was the God of the Egyptians. And every Jew who took their God and put their God's blood on their doorpost and roasted it, skewering it live, well, they would face death if there was not that redemption. At a certain point, we have to destroy our idols and say, there's a line in the sand, and we are going to stand on the side of Hashem and putting our faith exactly there. Because look, the same idolatry isn't gone from the world. Did you hear what happened in India?
What happened in India?
In India, just this past week, they passed a law that there's a life sentence for anyone who kills a cow in India. All cow killers in India, anyone who kills a cow, life in prison.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And there's something sick about that. When you raise the value of animal life to the value of human life, what you end up doing is degrading the value of human life to that of animal life. That's what really happens. And that's why I see the idolatry prevalent around the world. And that's why we need to stand. What's happening with Trump, you know, when it talks about leavening, it's hard for me to put my finger on what my issue is with Trump. I want to say my issue because it's only coming to, I don't want to talk about any incident or any tweet or anything like that. There's an underlying theme that makes me uncomfortable about Trump. And it's this idea of not only his arrogance, but his philosophy that might makes right, that ratings determine truth, And that's why when anyone attacks him, they're the failing New York Times or terrible actress or nobody watches them. Nobody. He's constantly saying that if people don't value you, then you have no value. If you don't have ratings, then you have no value. And this might makes right philosophy is antithetical to what Torah Judaism is. What does a Jew say? Abraham was a Hebrew. He was an Ivri. He was on one side. The rest of the world was on the other. What would Trump say about Abraham? He's alone. Nobody likes him. Nobody believes what he believes. He's a whack job. Okay, we don't believe that might makes right. We believe that truth, justice, compassion, even if the world stands against you, that makes right. There's a lot of things about Trump that really foundationally make me uncomfortable. And that's why it's a fair weather thing. Like, oh, right now he's saying a nice thing, so we're going to jump up and down and parade him on the Jeremy parade of Trump. Now I'm going to get emails from people. You're mean to Jeremy. I'm not mean to Jeremy. We needle each other.
First of all, also, I don't put Trump on a pedestal. He's better than Hillary, period. End of story.
You're wearing a Trump hat.
Only because
right now.
Of my bar mitzvah trip with my boy, this hat makes me happy. I'm not wearing a Trump hat because I support Donald Trump.
And explain the shrine.
The shrine has to do with my love for his hair, not for him as a person.
Right.
Okay, very good. Let me just tell you now what I wanted to say. That, you know, I was out just the other day. We took a dear friend of ours out into the mountains, and we went to go visit the Amos Cave. And the Amos Cave in our property was a new cave we discovered just about a week and a half ago. And my boys went out there 2 days ago, and we cleaned it all out. And it's like this amazing place where it's just enough, really, for one person. But you could put two or three people in there comfortably. But really, it's probably where Amos sat and received his revelation. The view there is beyond breathtaking. It's intoxicating. It's majestic. It's wonderful. It's so awesome. But there's also something really marvelous that happened there that really struck me strong. I was playing my guitar, and as I'm playing, I start hearing the echo back at me. And I'm like, that's really interesting. If I had to like make an image of what that looks like, the words that we speak literally bounce off the mountain and then ricochet back to our own ears and then continue off into oblivion. And if we sort of like somehow made those words into a cartoon, the words never really disappear. The words that we speak are eternal. The words of the prophets were eternal. They were spoken and they're now engraved into the fabric of the universe itself. And this Pesach, when we sat around a Passover Seder, and we tell over the story of our people. And we begin once again with Pharaoh, who wanted to lichalotenu. He wanted to wipe us out. And the Greeks that wanted to wipe us out. In every generation, there's this enemy that rises that wants to wipe us out. In each generation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Miadam, and the God of Israel saves us from their hands. And we think about the story. And I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, in a brief period in the exile. And just yesterday was Martin Luther King's Memorial Day. And he was born in Atlanta, Georgia. And I remember growing up hearing like the legends of Martin Luther King. And he was a big figure in my day school there. And in his last speech before he was assassinated, he said that I've broken the bondages of slavery and I've traveled through the desert. I've climbed the mountaintops and peered into the promised land. And I just think about that. He's just telling the Passover story. That he broke the bondages of slavery of Pharaoh, traveled through the desert for 40 years. Moses climbed up the mountaintop to Mount Nebo and peered into the promised land of Israel. And it was the story of the Jewish people that gave the inspiration, that gave the vision of the civil rights movement in America. That just as the Jewish people called for freedom, so too now people around the world are calling for freedom. And it's the story of the Jewish people that's transformed the world. Just a few years ago, the Dalai Lama sent a delegation of Tibetan students to Israel. And I was asked to speak to the students through our dear friend Mordechai Zeller. And I said, well, the Dalai Lama, why does he want to come to Israel? What is this about? And the Dalai Lama said, well, the Tibetans lost their land to China and they've been exiled. And he wanted to send the students to Israel to see that the Jewish people lost their land for 2,000 years, but they never gave up hope and that they made it back to the land of Israel. And today, the story of the Jewish people that we tell over Passover that started 3,000 years ago continues to change the world today. And as we tell the story over and over every year, what that does to us is it puts us inside the story. Judaism, the Torah, is not a religion. It is a reality that we live in. It is God's unfolding story. The Bible is a story because the story continues with our lives. We are the next chapter in the greatest story humanity has ever told, and we are now back in our land celebrating Passover once again in Yerushalayim. Imagine for so many years, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim. Next year in Yerushalayim. Now we have to say, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim habnuya, in a rebuilt Jerusalem, because we're already back in Jerusalem. We're so close to the finish line. And so I just want to bless all of our listeners out there that this be the best Pesach of your life. And if you're outside the land of Israel, this should be your last Passover outside the land.
It should be. And I just want to end with this. When we were sitting in that Amos cave, Jeremy, and we were reading from the book of Amos, because whether he was in that cave or not, it's hard for me to believe that he wasn't, because it just has
you
that.
You feel it.
You feel it. You feel it. And we know that he was for sure in these mountains here, like in these four or five mountains around us. That's for sure. And to read the last two verses of the book of Amos, you know, it says, Hine yamim ba'im neum Hashem. You know, the days are coming. He says, "Veshafti etshvut ami Israel, I will bring back the captivity of my people Israel, and they shall rebuild the ruined cities and inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards and drink their wine. They shall make gardens and eat their fruit, and I will plant them upon their land, and they shall no more be plucked up out of their land which I gave them," says Hashem. And we're here in the mountains where he said that. And we're planting vineyards.
And we're building the ruins.
Planting fruit trees. And we're building ruins. And we are literally the vehicles. I don't know what my great grandparents must have done to merit me experiencing this right now. But I know it's nothing I could have possibly done in my whole life to merit such a thing. But this is the generation we're in. And to really be tapped in, you got to come out here. You got to come to Israel. You got to come to Judea. There's nothing that we're going to say to make it happen for you. Just being out here, the energy, the spirituality, it's so uplifting. You got to make it happen. Come out and visit us. Until then, have a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. A happy and holy Passover from the hills of Judea. Shalom, shalom.
The best place to stay in Jerusalem is Windows of Jerusalem Apartments. Windows of Jerusalem Vacation Apartments offers luxury 5-star short and long-term rental apartments in the heart of Jerusalem's city center. Elegant and modern, inviting and comfortable. The view, the location, the great apartments, and the staff will truly make you feel at home in Jerusalem. Book your stay now at windowsofjerusalem.com. That's windowsofjerusalem.com.
Hello, my name is Tommy Waller. I'm the founder and president of HaYovel. More than 12 years ago, I made my first trip to the land of Israel. What I saw and heard changed my life forever. I stood with Nir Levi, an Orthodox Jewish man, in his vineyard in Samaria on the Mountain of Blessing. There, he opened his Bible and read the prophecy of Jeremiah that said, "You shall yet plant vineyards on the mountains of Samaria." We have the opportunity to join Israel as it celebrates the 50th year of the liberation of Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria. Come join us as we witness the unveiling of prophecy in the Jubilee year. Come be a part of the biblical narrative. Go to HaYovel.com, that's HaYovel.com, to find out more. And I hope to see you there.